ज्ञानचिनिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः नामश्रेष्ठं मनमपि शचिपुत्रमत्रस्वरूपं रूपं तस्यागजमुरुपुरीं माथुरीं गोष्ठवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशम् प्राप्तो यस्य प्रथितः कृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथन्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगण ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Continuing the theme, what is the truth? How will we know what is the truth? The Srimad Bhagavatam starts with the delineation of the truth. Satyam Param Dhimahi. The highest truth to be meditated upon, and that is described as Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. He to whom we offer our obeisance, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, Krishna. And in that first verse there's a summary of the qualities of the Supreme Truth. Satyam Param, also described in Bhagavad Gita as Param Brahma, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma. Again, in the translation, Srila Prabhupada gives that Arjuna saying, "You are the absolute truth, Param Brahma, Satyam Param." So these are all, although they're slightly different terms, they can all be translated as the absolute truth. Srimad Bhagavatam goes on in the second verse to declare that it propounds the highest truth, which is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Vedam Vastavatra Vastu Shivadam is all auspicious. It is the actual message of the Vedas. We see that this was very much the mood of Srila Prabhupada, distinguishing reality from illusion for the welfare of all. Actually throughout his writings, throughout his talking, and probably most prominent in his morning walk conversations, he would regularly point out the defects of atheistic scientists, Mayavadis, people who claim themselves to be God or that there is no God, and especially on these morning walks, devotees would find out various unique snippets of nonsense from the non-devotees and quote them to Srila Prabhupada, who would then give the light of Vedic knowledge on their various ideas. Or devotees would take the position of devil's advocate, or sometimes Srila Prabhupada himself would take that position to elicit replies from Srila Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada is very contentious. in presenting Krishna consciousness. It wasn't the let's all be friends, love and peace style by any means. He was a chopping technique. He quoted his own spiritual master as having the chopping technique. Mayavadis, Ramakrishna, in one letter he mentioned this chopping technique. He mentioned Mayavadi, he specifically mentioned Ramakrishna mission. Ramakrishna mission is famous for promoting the idea Jato Mat Toto Pat. As many opinions, that many paths. So that would seem, well, that's nice, but no. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur didn't think it was nice. He thought it was not nice. How is that not? Live and let live. We can all live together, different opinions. No, not nice. Why is it not nice? Because it obscures the fact that there is the absolute truth. Not that there are so many relative truths which are all equally valid. And truth is something which you can just imagine yourself. Here in America especially, this idea is prominent that, well, the truth is self-defined, user-defined. If it's true for you, if it works for you, fine. That's good. You like it? Good. Everything's whatever you like, it's all good. That's good. You like to do this, you like to do that, it's good. But it is misleading. It seems to be nice and promote social harmony, but it is misleading in as much as it ignores or fails to take into account certain truths, such as the fact that we all are revolving in the cycle of birth and death. And there is a solution to get out from this, and that is surrender to Krishna. And other ideas might temporarily seem to be nice, but if they are presented that, well, it's all good, it's all the same, ignoring the fact that there is the absolute truth, who is Krishna, then it obscures the opportunity which we have to take to Krishna consciousness. If we think, well, it's just you do your thing, I do my thing, and it all works out the same. That means there is no absolute truth. Truth is user-defined, but it's not. Reality is independent of our assessment of it. Reality is independent of our knowledge of it and our assessment of it, just like I gave the example this morning. Gandhinagar is the capital of Gujarat. So, you may know that or not know that, but it is. You may believe it or not believe it, it is. You may like it or not like it. You might say that, well, Valsad should be the capital of Gujarat. Valsad is a small city in Gujarat. But whatever you think about it, the fact is that Gandhinagar is the capital of Gujarat. Of course, that is a relative truth. It's a truth, but it's a relative truth. Because the very fact that there's a state called Gujarat is just a man-made concept. The state of Gujarat didn't exist until 1950-something. Was it 61? 61, 1961. And it won't exist forever. The land will stay there for a long time, but it may be reconstrued, maybe split up into smaller states or made into bigger states, or the country that we know as India may not remain as it is now. You might get put in prison in India if you made such a statement publicly. But that's the way of the world. Things change all the time. There was no country Republic of India until 1947. And apart from all that, the whole Earth planet and all the planets in the world will all be destroyed in due course of time. So it's a relative truth. But we can we can cite that as an example to show that truth is not user-defined. Someone can say, well, as far as I'm concerned, Gandhinagar isn't the capital of Gujarat, and it's we live in a world where everyone's entitled to his own opinion. You can have your own opinion, but facts are facts. And someone's opinion doesn't change the fact. You may think, well, it was a bad idea to... Actually, I think it's a bad idea to have Delhi as the capital of India because it's so close to the Pakistan border. It's a pretty stupid choice. Just the British had the capital there. But so that's an opinion, but that doesn't change the fact that Delhi is the national capital of India. New Delhi, to be more precise. By one's opinion, that may change, but the absolute truth doesn't change. And our opinion regarding the absolute truth, we may say, well, I don't believe there is any absolute truth. Or I don't believe that Krishna is the absolute truth. But that our opinion will never change that. Our opinion might change some truth that is relative. If enough people, especially Indian citizens, get together and say, hey, let's move the capital of India to Nagpur, for instance. That might happen, or just we need to move it. It might happen. But if enough people get together and say, we don't believe that Krishna is the absolute truth, it doesn't change that Krishna is the absolute truth. Or even though pretty much, many people in the world know that New Delhi is the capital of India. So that may be taken as a fact. But it's a relative fact, not only because the capital could be shifted from India, but because certainly that fact will no longer be true at some point in time. Because nothing in this world stays. The country of India may stop being the country India. The capital may shift. There are a lot of people living northwest of Delhi who would like the capital of India to be shifted to Islamabad. You never know, they might succeed. It doesn't look very likely. The whole country, India, may cease to exist. They may be reorganized into various small states or become part of a mega state. Who can tell what will happen in due course of time? It's very difficult. We can't. Those who live in India at the present time, they couldn't imagine that India could break into smaller states, or those living in the United States couldn't imagine that maybe one day Washington State, the citizens will secede from the Union. There's no sign of that happening now. But you never know. It might happen. It wasn't expected that the USSR would dissolve, but it did. So these are all relative truths. We can say confidently now, Gandhinagar is the capital of Gujarat. The capital of Washington State is... what's it called? Columbia. Olympia. Olympia. Okay, I learned something from all of you. The capital of Washington State is Olympia. But that won't be true always. Nor does it matter if you're living in Swargaloka. It doesn't matter at all that the capital... In fact, I lived almost 60 years in this body and it never mattered to me, and it still doesn't matter to me, that Olympia is the capital of Washington State. So it doesn't really matter. Or if you live, probably only if you're living in Washington State or if you're doing a geography exam or something like that, does it matter? And the only reason that it matters if you're doing a geography exam, it doesn't really matter to you, but you have to get the marks. But that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead matters to every living being in every time, place and circumstance. Since time immemorial, right now and into the future, not only the foreseeable future, into the unforeseeable future. It is the most important fact that will never change. So this is really important to know. Yeah, please get your cell phone off. So we are here discussing the truth. There are various truths. We could discuss so many. In the schools, they teach various truths along with various lies, which they also probably the teachers think are truths. In that sense, they're maybe not lies, they're untruths, you could say. Or not as true as they presume them to be. Just a lot of what is called scientific knowledge is not knowledge at all, because they did more research and found out that what they thought was true was not true. And those fans of listening to my lectures may have heard me give the example several times that at school I was taught that biological cells are very simple organisms and very soon we will be able to reproduce them in the laboratory, simple biological cells. And some years later I discovered that they had discovered that even the simplest of biological cells is extremely complex. And there's no way that they're going to be synthesized or reproduced from raw chemicals anytime soon. And then even quite some time after that, I found out that even when I was studying at school, that biological cells are very simple organisms, which will be soon reproducible in the laboratory. I found out that even at that time when I was studying it, scientists already knew that the simplest biological cells are very complex organisms, and there's no question of reproducing them in the laboratory at least at any time soon. So you may say, well, why did they teach us in the school? Well, it takes time to update all the curricula, and takes time to reteach the teachers who already think that what is wrong is right. But if I'd have written in my test that actually biological cells are very complex organisms, I'd have been failed. So that's why I say they may be teaching untruths. And of course, one of the main purposes of education is to indoctrinate people into nationalistic propaganda and other kinds of hogwash. Yeah, hogwash was one of it's an English word, but it's one of the words that Srila Prabhupada used. His most common term was nonsense. There are many colorful terms in English: hogwash, balderdash, baloney, and in America, BS. That's actually, that goes along with cow dung almost. In Indian languages, if someone's stupid, they say he's got cow dung in his head. Sharya Gobar, that's another saying, yeah. That means something, that's something different. In Bengali it's saying, Matai Gobar Ache. He's got cow dung in his head. Sharya Gobar means something, counterfeit, or looks like it's the real thing, but it's not. Bull's dung instead of cow's dung. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada is very concerned to present the truth, and his books are full of that. And also his letters, many of his letters. Srila Prabhupada wrote many letters as part of his preaching strategy, especially before he went to the West. Part of his preaching strategy was to write letters to newspapers, to prominent people, and this came out in his Back to Godhead magazine also. We can see that Srila Prabhupada carefully read the newspapers, and when he found something that, well, he responded many times by writing letters to the editor, by writing letters to various prominent people, giving his response to various things that they'd said or various issues they were concerned with. And through these letters, he proposed, in many of his letters, he would propose that he would write to him prominent people in human society, in, mostly in Indian society, and would propose that, okay, you have this idea, I can give you the spiritual way to fulfill it, and I'm ready to give you that guidance. But no one responded. I'll read part of a letter that Srila Prabhupada wrote on the 20th of January, 1952, to Pandit Jawaharlal Nehru. And he writes to him as the president of the All India National Congress Working Committee. Although, actually he was the prime minister, but for some reason he addressed him in that capacity. Dear Panditji, Srila Prabhupada wrote, I'm reading this because the subject is about truth, and the subject I'm going through is about truth. So Srila Prabhupada wrote, your article heading as, quote, "Let us be true to one another," unquote, published in the AB Patrika. That would be the Amrita Bazaar Patrika, maybe Ananda Bazaar Patrika, Allahabad edition, dated 30/12/51, attracted my attention, and I read it over and over again. This article contains the nucleus of future activities of the human society in the spiritual realm, and I have read in your statement about your deep thought on the onward march of human civilization. You have rightly said the following words in this connection. Viz means thus. So you see that Srila Prabhupada he begins with praising. Yes, you have spoken very well. You have written very well. Very good points. I'm with you. So naturally people like to read. If you open a letter, say, I read your article and it was the biggest bunch of rubbish I ever read in my life. You don't attract the attention of others, favorable attention. So Srila Prabhupada's using this technique, which he often quoted, this Hey Sadhava Sakala Vihaya Chaitanya Charan Chaitanya Charan Chaitanya Chandra Charane Kurute Anuraga. The process of flattering someone. You are a very great man. And then saying, so my request to you is, you're such a great personality, you give up all your hogwash ideas, Srila Prabhupada translated like this, and just surrender at the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya. So he's using this technique. Srila Prabhupada didn't have a very high opinion of Pandit Nehru overall. He knew him personally. Nehru was one of his customers in his pharmacy, Prayag Pharmacy in Allahabad. So he's quoting Nehru. So we search for new ways, new aspects of the truth. New aspects of the truth. That in itself shows his ignorance of the truth. So we search for new ways, new aspects of the truth, more in harmony with our environment. And we question each other and debate and quarrel and evolve any number of isms and philosophies. As in the days of Socrates, we live in an age of questioning, but the questioning is not confined to a city like Athens. It is worldwide. So, end of that quote. And Srila Prabhupada goes on as follows in this letter. There are two ways of answering such questions. I mean the deductive way and the inductive way. Mortality of man is established by either of the above ways. In deductive way, we take it for granted from reliable source, man is mortal. But in the inductive way, we approach the same truth by our poor reasoning of observation and experiment. By observation, we can see that Gandhi dies. Here it's written Fotilal, should be Motilal dies. That's the father of Pandit Nehru. Motilal dies, Siyar Das dies, Patel dies. This refers to Sardar Patel. And therefore we conclude that man dies or man is mortal. Man is mortal in quotation marks. This is a principle. This is a truth. Man is mortal. So Srila Prabhupada's on the topic of truth. One truth. Man is mortal. How can we know that man is mortal? Theoretically, any one of us present in this room or any man alive at the present time could live forever in the present body. Theoretically. But we learn from authorities that man is mortal. So we can accept that. And we can also see that, well, everyone else in the history of the human race died. So we expect everyone else presently present to also die. Although there are some Chiranjeevis still. But in course of time, they will also leave us. Chiranjeevi means long livers. And there are few in the world. Vyas, who is at the time of the Mahabharata, he's still alive. Parashuram, Hanuman, Vibhishana, Ashvatthama, yeah, he's still alive. So there are seven Chiranjeevis who are still alive. But they'll also, in due course of time, pass on. So, then again, in the same deductive way, when we reason that man is mortal and we find that Jawaharlal is a man and thus conclude that Jawaharlal is mortal, you're going to die. Truth means... No, I'm just thinking of quite a few years ago, I was at a house program in England with mostly, I think it was all English people present. That means their ancestors, going back many generations, were born in England. So someone was asking me so many questions and a bit challenging, and I said to him, just try to understand one thing. You're going to die soon. And one girl said, oh, don't be so nasty. What a cruel thing to say. Well, it's just a fact. I said that, you know, to get things in perspective. You know, you say you want to challenge and show yourself to be so intelligent, but just try to consider you're going to die soon. Put all of your thoughts within the perspective of that fact. Oh, very bad to say such a thing. One girl protested. I suppose she got the idea she's also going to die soon. Die soon means everyone's going to die soon. I mean, it wasn't that I was cursing him. It's everyone's going to die soon. So, Srila Prabhupada continues his letter thus. Truth means absolute truth. Yeah. Real truth. It's true that Olympia is the capital of Washington State, but it's not fully true, in as much as it wasn't true 300 years ago. There was no Olympia and there was no Washington State, although what the land that is now called Washington State was here, but there was no conception of Washington State or Washington, after whom it was named. And in course of time it won't be also. So real truth means absolute truth. Srila Prabhupada continues, relative truth is conditional. Yeah, the truth that Olympia is the capital of Washington, it depends on the condition of a certain span of time, within a certain span of time. Just like Constantinople was the capital. If at one point in time, if someone had said Constantinople is the capital of the Byzantine Empire, they would have been true. But nowadays there's no Byzantine Empire and Constantinople has been renamed. So it's no longer true. Now you can change that to was, but not is. So relative truth is conditional, and when the conditions fail, the relative truth disappears. But absolute truth does not exist on conditions. It is above all conditions. So when we speak of truth, we may take it for the absolute truth. So this Nehru's, his statement, let us be true to one another. Srila Prabhupada picked this up. And now he's discussing the absolute truth. The whole idea, let us be true to one another. There's so many, it sounds very good, isn't it? Let us be true to one another. But there's so many inbuilt faults in the one another. First of all, this presumes that I am this body and mind, and you are the body and mind, and we will be true to each other. On which platform? What does it mean to be true to each other? When we mistake our body and mind to be ourselves and other bodies and minds to be other people's, then how can we be true when the whole platform is a misconception or falsity? And be true to someone means that, yes, we can be trusted by them, and they can trust us, we'll deal with them fairly. But just by making some slogan, let's all love each other. Imagine a world in which there are no countries and no religion, and everyone lives just for the moment. Imagine, that's all. That's as far as it goes. Only imagine. And you may say, well, let's all be nice. Let's all be nice and good and peaceful. And it's not going to work. We're not in pure consciousness to do that. And even if we are, we're all good and nice and peaceful. And then some strong tribe or band will come in and just ransack everything. So simply, let us be true to one another. It sounds good, but there's no real knowledge behind it. It's a slogan. It's empty, actually. It's the kind of thing that people say which makes them sound nice, but it's there's no substance to it. As long as we're on the platform of the relative truth, all ideas of love, being nice, compassion, it simply sounds nice, but it can never be established. And because we're trying to establish niceness or goodness on a platform of ignorance, it's doomed to fail. It will All ideas of being good and being nice and loving and compassionate will all dissolve, because it doesn't address the real problem of the ignorance of who we are. Our envy of Krishna, which is the basis of our existence in this material world, and because of envy of Krishna, then we have material desires, tendency to be angry, we tend to be greedy, kaam, krodh, lobh, moha. we're in illusion, we're proud, we're envious of others. Just by saying, let's all love each other, let's be true to one another, just by saying that, I feel, oh, what a nice idea. But it doesn't work. And then someone says, oh, yeah, let's all live and just be nice and do what we like. And then someone says, oh, I like rap music. Okay, so let's play very loudly rap music all around our hippie commune for love and peace. And someone says, I don't like rap music. Well, I like rap music. Or I don't like it. And then you argue. And then you become frustrated. Why is he not acting for my sense gratification? Why should I? And someone will find that, yeah, people are being very tolerant, so he can take advantage and push his own agenda, what I want to do. And others, they're tolerant. Okay, let's smile and be nice. And he's taking more and more advantage, and then they get ticked off, and then they start complaining to him, and then there's an argument, and they say, oh, no, let's all love each other. And then they go back loving each other, but inside they're feeling unhappy, disturbed, and eventually it all just dissolves because there's no solid basis. The truth is Krishna. We can be united on the principle of selfless service to Krishna. Otherwise, not. And Srila Prabhupada continues, and when we speak of approaching the truth by new ways, we may take it for granted what we want to approach the truth. That should be that we want to approach the truth by the inductive way. It seems that this has not been, that there are some mistakes in the transcription of this. Absolute truth is described in the Vedas as Satyam Param Dhimahi. This is from the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Summum Bonum. And from this absolute truth, everything emanates. Janmadyasya Yataha. That's also from the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This absolute truth is described in the Vedic literatures as Sanatan or eternal. And the philosophy or science which deals in such eternal subjects is described as Sanatan Dharma. So Srila Prabhupada's agreeing with Pandit Nehru. Yes, very good idea. I've read your article again and again. Very good, talking about truth and being true to one another. And the truth is Sanatan Dharma. At this point, Nehru, if at all he read this far, is quite likely to have stopped reading because he hated Sanatan Dharma. He didn't like it at all. He was the probably in all of recent history, the greatest enemy of Sanatan Dharma. Those who know something about Indian history can understand this. His idea of a new India, his idea was that India has... India is backward because we have too much religion. So this religion is backward, and in the modern age, the Ramakrishna Vivekananda and Nehru have been great misleaders. So Srila Prabhupada goes on. Therefore, we have first to find out the eternal absolute truth by some new ways. And after that, Srila Prabhupada puts parentheses, within that parenthesis, a question mark. Because Nehru has said we have to find new ways of discover. What is it? We search for new ways, new aspects of the truth. And Srila Prabhupada is saying, new ways? New ways? What is this new ways? Srila Prabhupada is questioning that. And then we have to find out the new aspects of the Absolute Truth in harmony with our present environment. So he's paraphrasing what Nehru has said, and then Srila Prabhupada goes on to give the Shastric perspective.
The present environment is in doubt and undoubtedly different from the old. And if we compare the present with the old, we can very easily discover that, one, people in the present age are generally short living. So he's talking about, Nehru is talking about the present age. It's an age of questioning. And Srila Prabhupada is saying, the present age is Kali Yuga. He doesn't say that, but he takes the present age to mean the Kali Yuga. This is from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Prayanal payusha sabya kalavasmin yuge janaha janaha mandasu mandamatiyo mandabhagya hi upadruta. Srila Prabhupada gives 5 points which paraphrase this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada writes, the average duration of life being 30 years or so. It's given us 30 years. I don't know if that's another typo. There are quite a few typos in this letter. Or if Srila Prabhupada put that. Number two, they are generally not very simple. Almost every man is designing and crooked. Yeah. Not simple. Don't trust anyone. Who can you trust? Number three, they have no scope for high thinking because they are perplexed with different relative truths. Really profound statement. Because everyone is engrossed in relative truths. The idea of universal education. Everyone has to learn so many things and their head becomes filled with all kinds of ideas which they take to be truth, which many of them may be truth, but they're all relative. And some of them are considered to be truth, but they're not. Just like, I'm pretty sure the kids at school are being taught something equivalent to this: the cell, the simplest cell is a very simple organism. They're probably still being taught that. So not that, exactly that, but something else they're being taught, which later they'll find out is not true. So this is, so some of the, but the idea is that, yeah, we got it all worked out. We got it worked out. Our society is good, and you have to study like this, and then you get a job, and you live, and so the people have filled up, their heads are filled up with relative truths. And Srila Prabhupada said they have no scope for high thinking because they are perplexed with different relative truths. They can't even think. Can't even think of higher truths. My personal experience, living among many very simple people for several years, in Bangladesh, among people who were mostly illiterate, simple in that sense, and who had been through a horrific genocidal experience just a few years before. I was in the first went to Bangladesh in 1979, and I was there on and off for about 10 years. The Independence War, as it's called, was in 1971, and it was horrific what the Pakistani army did in Bangladesh. So people had been through that. But I could discuss with them, and they had a conception of, many people had a conception of a higher truth, despite all that. No one had a religious crisis because of all of that. No one thought, well, there's no God, otherwise why did all these horrific things happen? Dr. Harvey Cox was a big name in academia, in the religious field. He was also very favorable to the Krishna consciousness movement. And he noted that he went to Vrindavan once, nothing to do with ISKCON, before ISKCON had a center in Vrindavan. He was a Christian. And he noted that in Vrindavan, people, they like, they'll sit down and talk. They're ready to talk. They're not in a rush to go off somewhere else, so they don't think it's a... They'll sit down and talk about the nature of God. They're very willing to do so. Of course, India's changed now because India's become less simple. It's become a very money-driven society everywhere, even in the remote villages. Everything's driven by money. And therefore, people are concerned with relative truths. For most people, the truth is, I need to earn to pay the bills. Right? That's something I hear often in America. I've got to pay the bills. I've got a job so I can pay the bills. And for them, to pay the bills is the aim of life. And if you can do that, that's it. So how can they think of higher truths? Their whole occupation is not only to pay the bills, but to pay the debts. There's not only bills, regular bills, but debts, and then buying food. And that occupies people's pretty much their whole attention. And whatever's left goes on sports, and you know, there's a whole charade goes on for several months until the presidential election. Big hoo-ha, hullabaloo. So this occupies people's attention. So they're entangled in relative truths, and they have no capacity to think of higher truths. If we tell them that you have to die, but actually you are eternal, and they have no capacity for even thinking of such things. Several years ago, a godbrother of mine, Abhiram Prabhu, he was working with some lawyers in Florida at the time. He told me he had this experience. For some time he was working in a legal office in Florida. And you have these lawyers who are highly educated people, highly intelligent people, and his experience, Abhiram Prabhu, was that when they're not discussing their business, which their legal business, they talk about football and mostly about football and about really mundane things. And he told me, Abhiram Prabhu told me, that when sometimes he would try to inject some philosophical thought into the discussion, they'd look at him like he's crazy. No capacity, Srila Prabhupada says. They have no scope for high thinking because they are perplexed with different relative truths. Number four, unfortunate as they are in this age, their problems remain unsolved for the whole life, even though they are tackled by their leaders. That means the problems are tackled by the leaders. The leaders, the politicians come in, I'll solve all the problems. Trump will solve the problems. Hillary will solve the problems. And no one solves any problems. Or even if they apparently solve some problems, in the solving of problems, they create more problems, because that is the nature of this material world. So people being unfortunate in this age, their problems remain unsolved for the whole life. They make the best effort to solve a problem, but unfortunately the same becomes more acute and stringent. Just like the governments of the Western world are thinking how to solve the problem of terrorism, but it just gets worse. What's the solution? They don't know. They don't have a clue. Well, in Europe, some people say the solution is, well, just send all the Muslims away. They think that would be a solution. But that in itself would, even to try to attempt to do that, would cause so many problems. Another solution is just anyway, let's not talk about their attempts to solve. But that's just an example. People are perplexed, they're afraid. Terrorism! Oh!
terrorism, what to do. They're always afraid because any time, any place, terrorists can strike. Living in fear. What's the solution? No solution. It just gets worse and worse. Number five. And above all, people in this age are always distressed by famine, scarcity, grieves, it's written here, and diseases in an increasing ratio. And Srila Prabhupada goes on and on in the letter, but I'll just quote this part. Why these problems in Kali Yuga, so serious problems? Of course, if you're living in Washington State, in this area, we may think, well, there's no major problem. You see, the climate's a bit rough, but otherwise, the economy's good in this area. Even in, when was it, 98, was it? There was a serious downturn in the economy in the West. 2008. There was a serious downturn in the economy, but this area wasn't so much affected, so I'm told. And people are earning well, the air is not too polluted, and we don't have so many problems up here, we're all quite happy up here. That's another kind of ignorance. To think, I am happy. The economy is quite good, and we pay the bills, we have food on the table, and everyone is living happily. Rubbish. They're not happy at all. So everyone is a victim of the mind and the senses. Why? Why is there so much suffering? Because the ultimate reason is not only in Kali Yuga, but it's not only in Kali Yuga, it's not only in the present time. Even in Satya Yuga, the whole world is full of suffering. That's the very nature of this world. Dukhalayamashashvatam. It may not be so acute in previous ages, but the very nature of this world is that it is full of suffering. And the root cause of suffering is ignorance. Ignorance of what? Ignorance means of the truth. What is the truth? We are all eternal servants of Krishna. We are meant for serving Krishna. Forgetting that, we suffer in this material world. It's a very, very simple formula. If people can just understand this, we can become... This is the truth, by understanding which we can become free from all suffering. So it's important to know this truth. But most people, even if we try to present it to them, they can't even begin to understand or accept it. For various reasons. One reason may be that they're simply not, they don't have enough piety to accept it. Because it requires some purity of heart to accept it. We're suffering in ignorance. Why is that? Because we're impure. What is that impurity? Envious of Krishna. So if we have a high degree of envy of Krishna, then we, even if we discuss it all logically, we think we can logically and rationally understand there is God, and God is Krishna, we are all servants of Krishna. But many people, they're too contaminated, they're too envious of Krishna to accept this. Or the concepts may just, because they've been raised in worldviews in which they think that, for instance, they don't think that reincarnation can be, for them it seems like some fantastic idea. How is that possible? It just seems, it's like some absurdity. You're born and then you die, that's it, finished. Or you're born and you either go to heaven with Jesus or you go to hell. And they're just locked in some way of thinking. So preaching means to present the truth, to convince people of the truth of Krishna consciousness.
that we are all eternal servants of Krishna. But mostly people, they're so much wrapped in the ignorance of thinking that sense gratification is the goal of life. I mean, they don't even think about it. They don't sit down and think philosophically and come to a conclusion, well, sense gratification is the goal of life. They don't think like that. They don't think at all. They don't think. They just do what everyone around them is doing. And everyone in the world does that. If you're born in a Muslim family in Iraq, for instance, then you're going to think, well, yeah, Islam, that's it. That's the world view that you're inculcated with, that everyone around you has. You take that to be real. Or if you're born, grow up in America, there's more of a plurality of ideas. But the basic idea is that we're in this world to be happy. And if you're happy, if you like to do scuba diving and that makes you happy, yeah, do it. Of course, you have to pay for it. It doesn't come free. If you like walking in the big outside, you can go for walks. And again, you have to get out of the city to drive out to get to go on a country walk. But you're free. If you want to be a hippie or a, what else is there? Punk, yeah. Rock star? Well, you can't necessarily be a rock star. It's not so easy. You can dream of, you can try to be one. If you want to be a politician, you can pursue your dream. You have this. But basically the idea, everywhere, everyone, in different, under different brands, is to enjoy yourself in this life and maybe in a future life. So one truth, what can we say? If someone says, what is the truth? One truth is that the whole world is in ignorance and people are very much in need of knowledge of the truth, of Krishna consciousness. That's true. At least we know, we are fortunate enough to know, that people need Krishna consciousness. That's true. We can all here accept people need Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, present and future, it's very black. People are suffering now, and they will continue to suffer until they accept Krishna as their goal of life, unless they accept Krishna consciousness. Without the preaching of Krishna consciousness, without Sankirtan, without chanting the holy names, distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, trying to bring people to Krishna consciousness, without our doing this, the world will become more and more nasty and horrible day by day, literally day by day. Tatas chanu dinam dharma satyam shocham shamadaya kalena balina rajan nangshantyayor balang smriti hi, as stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. In Kali Yuga, with the passing of every single day, all good things will diminish. Dharma, religiosity. Satyam, truthfulness, the quality of truthfulness. The truth doesn't decline, but the quality of truthfulness, that means to speak the truth. That means to not be cheating and deceitful. That will decline day by day. Cleanliness, satyam, shocham, kshama, tolerance. Now in American universities, they've invented this term, microaggression. So if you say something which might be slightly, very slightly, micro, annoying to someone, then that's considered, oh, very bad. People can't tolerate even a slight suggestion that something might be wrong with them. Satyam Shosam Kshama. Tolerance also means tolerance of heat and cold and difficulties. One disadvantage of the comfortable life in America is that if you get thrown into some discomfort, then people find it very difficult to tolerate. People are so used to, when it's hot, they have air conditioning, when it's cold, they have heating, all the different arrangements to adjust, make adjustments so that people are always comfortable. And then if you find yourself in a situation where there is no air conditioning in the summer and there is no heating in the winter, then, oh, very difficult to tolerate. Whereas people who don't have these things, they find it, they're just accustomed to that. Just like now, unlike previously, now in India, the great majority of houses have installed electric fans. And in much of India nowadays, unlike 30 years or so ago, most of the time there is electric current on supply. So people are used to having electric fans whirring all the time in the heat. And they become very disturbed if it goes off. Whereas a generation ago, people were used to living without that. They didn't think it was a big thing. But nowadays, oh, no fan. They can't tolerate. Shama, daya, yeah, compassion. It's a common thing in the city. Srila Prabhupada pointed out, even at that time, that one person is attacked in the city and no one will go to help him. If you go to help him, you could also be sued by the criminals who attack that person. Or they may kill you also. So no one wants to help anyone else. Kshama daya. Kalena bali, by the mighty power of time in Kali Yuga, all these things. Lifespan, bodily strength, that's very much seen in, I don't know about America, but in India it's very prominent at the present time, that young people, 20 years old, and they have so many physical problems, and they get the bad back at 20 years old, and they can't lift a box, and all kinds of physical problems. And mental, lack of mental strength also. Previously, in India and in the West, education, there was a lot of rote learning. Nowadays, that's considered, that's useless. You don't. But actually, people the children from a young age, rote learning means you just learn by heart. They say, no, that's useless. You have to teach children how to think. But the Vedic system of education is, first of all, you teach the Veda, one or two or three, sometimes four, and they just learn it. And then afterward, they learn what it means. But they may spend a few years just learning how to chant it. They're very intelligent people and very good character also. But nowadays they have all different systems of education and people are becoming more and more stupid. That's why they have to import all of you. Isn't it? Why does America have to import all these mostly South Indians? Why? Because their own education system is, they think they're superior, but their own education system is unable to produce so many persons of your caliber. So they, somehow or other, they got the money. How did they get the money? That's another story. How is America so wealthy when they don't produce anything? It's all financial manipulation. The bubble will pop at some point in time. Get on the land, grow your own food. Hard time, what is it? A hard rain will fall. What's that? A hard rain's gonna fall. Yeah. So people need Krishna consciousness. The world is horrible and it's becoming worse. As I remember when I was a kid, the people of my parents' generation would always say, oh, the world's got so much worse since I was young. And now I look back and say, oh, it's so much worse than it used to be. It's always getting worse. And probably our... Oh, I remember I saw in a paper in England, there was someone had written something about nostalgically looking back at the quaint 1970s. He was growing up in the 1970s in England, and myself. But I didn't think it was quaint. I thought it was nasty and violent, but I thought it was quite quaint compared to the present day. What does quaint mean? It means charmingly nice and with a touch of naivete. That's not quaint. If you don't know what a word means, you can look it up in your online dictionary. But that's charming, with a touch of naivete, simple, like that, charmingly simple. Like that. But so they're thinking, oh, it's so nice in the 1970s compared to now. People were so innocent. Well, I at the time didn't think it was innocent. I was surprised to read that. It seemed so innocent compared to the present day. So what did you find, Damodar Vamsidhari? What does it say? Having a old-fashioned attractiveness or charm. Okay, that's good enough. So there's one truth. The world is a mess and getting worse. Krishna consciousness needs to be preached. Those who have this knowledge should try to share it with others. Harinam, books, prasadam. The truth, another truth, is that sinful activities, people don't even know what are sinful activities. They don't even know. They don't consider, there's not even a concept of sin among many people. The idea that there is sin, you do something wrong, you'll be punished for that, they don't know. And they commit. What people think is just normal life is very sinful. People say, well, let's, you know, we'll live together peacefully and be nice to each other and say good morning as we walk in the morning and we cross other people walking. And they're nice people and we're nice people. And in their own minds, they're nice people. But they go for a morning walk, they go home, and then they eat some meat. The traditional British breakfast is eggs and bacon. Sinful. But people think, oh, that's normal. That's nice. See, good traditional British people eat eggs and bacon for breakfast. But how much suffering? How much suffering they're making to others? And they think it's like, the mother very nicely looks after the children and gives them nice meat so they can grow up strong. But they don't realize how much suffering. They don't think. They become shocked when they hear that so many people are killed in a road accident or some terrorist act, and they become shocked. But at every moment, so many animals are being tortured throughout from the moment they're born, they're tortured. And then they die, they're killed in horrible ways, and that becomes your nice breakfast. simply violence. They're shocked when humans are killed. But what about the animal? They feel pain. People don't even consider. And by the power of Kali Yuga, people think meat eating is very normal, good, nice. Illicit sex, all over the world, illicit sex is being vigorously promoted. You have to, if you don't allow gay rights, we're going to come and bomb your country. So that you can, it's nice. One man likes another, or loves another man, one woman loves another one. So you must allow it because they love each other. And they like to have sex together. It's illicit sex. What to speak of? Oh, the whole society is simply based on promoting sex. And it's just a normal thing that children have sex. They promote it. The parents, they feel something's wrong with my child if he doesn't have, they're not having boyfriend, girlfriend at a young age. Then marry, divorce, and on and on. And people think this is normal. There's no understanding of the laws of nature. Meat eating, illicit sex, gambling. People say, oh, you can win a lottery ticket, and if you win on the lottery, you'll win a weekend in Las Vegas. So you can go and do more gambling. They don't realize this is sinful. Intoxication, all kinds of intoxication. Alcohol is one of the pillars of Western civilization. It's just absolutely part of the Western way of life. It's to be a normal American, you have to drink alcohol. It's just part of the way of life. And that at the university where the young people are they're supposed to be learning so they can become the leaders or the intellectual class of society, Friday night and Saturday night, they're just completely intoxicated, like screaming and yelling, like some making sounds like demons from hell. Really, isn't it? And then there'll be illicit sex and some, I don't know here, but in many places there may be some violence because it's just to go out to any university area on Friday night or Saturday night, it's like a trip to hell. These people who may be during the week polite and this and that, they become intoxicated and they're just completely hellish consciousness. And there are many people who their whole life they're in completely hellish consciousness because practically their whole life they're intoxicated. And these may be prescription drugs. You've probably all seen such people, maybe not those of you who are from an Indian background. But they spend their whole life in some state of their consciousness is adjusted by some drug. They take those drugs because if they weren't taking them, they'd be worse. Such suffering. And that's also considered normal. Something seriously wrong with this society. And it's getting worse and worse and worse every day. Everyone is affected. Every man, woman, and child, and every living being on this planet is affected by this immorality, meat eating, gambling, illicit sex, and intoxication means sinfulness, immorality. And people just take it as normal. They say, no, yeah, okay, yeah, it's fine. Or if you don't agree that it's normal, there's something seriously wrong with you. And people who want to stand up for this morality, there's something seriously wrong with them. What an upside down, back to front situation it is. Upside down, back to front, inside out. Everything all wrong. They don't know that by defying the laws of God, defying the laws of nature, they will have to suffer more and more and more and more. They don't know. This is the truth. The absolute truth is Krishna. If we don't accept the truth of Krishna, and we invent our own ideas of what is the truth. The truth is that, well, as long as you don't harm anyone else, you can do what you like. So you can take intoxication, you can have meat eating, you're not harming anyone else, just animals, you're not harming anyone, they're just animals. So these ideas, because we've invented our own ideas of the truth, based on the idea that we should live for sense gratification, which itself is untruth. Therefore, they've invented so many ideas of morality, but they don't know the truth that we will have to suffer. They don't know this. And they're suffering more and more and more and more. And their so-called solution is to try to, what they think is the solution just makes things worse and worse and worse. The idea that we should all enjoy sense gratification, and therefore, homosexuality, fine, if you like, it's okay. For instance. And in this way, they're entangled more and more and more, but still they have the hope that they will be happier. They don't see how they're making the world more and more and more and more hellish. Or even if they see, they don't consider that there's something fundamentally wrong, or even if they consider there's something fundamentally wrong, they can only make an adjustment on the material platform. Or we have to have alternative forms of energy that will solve the problem. Or they may have some religious solution, but their religion is also based on ignorance, because they don't know that we are all eternal living beings. We are here birth after birth after birth. Many people who propose a religious solution, they don't even accept there's reincarnation. And those that do accept reincarnation, they just bring out this hodgepodge of what they call New Age ideas. They don't have any clear understanding. Srila Prabhupada's books give that a clear understanding. There's nothing in this world at the present time like Srila Prabhupada's books. They require to be distributed widely and studied regularly and carefully by the followers, those who would claim themselves to be followers of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada is the epitome or the personification of distinguishing reality from illusion for the welfare of all. He is the living Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, don't clap me. Harishari Prabhu coined this understanding that when he got the chance to become Srila Prabhupada's servant, he understood this was a great opportunity for him, because all the truths that we learn in Srimad Bhagavatam are seen directly in the personality of Srila Prabhupada at every moment. And actually that's stated in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavata. Chaitanya Charitamrita states, Ek Bhagavata Baro Bhagavata Shastra or Bhagavat Bhakta Bhakti Rasapatra. There are two kinds of Bhagavat. Bhagavat means that which is in connection with Bhagavan. Bhagavan means who possesses all opulences or all good fortune. So one Bhagavat is the Bhagavata Shastra. the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that is stated, that is the major one. And another one is the person, Bhagavat, who is the Bhakti Rasa Patra. He is the he embodies, or within him is all bhakti, bhakti rasa. So the book Bhagavatam is said to be bigger because that defines what is, who is Bhagavan, what is a Bhagavat. That's the the person Bhagavat lives in relationship to the book Bhagavat. So in that sense, the book Bhagavat is more important. But Srila Prabhupada sometimes said that the person of the devotee is more important. When one devotee, Sarva Bhavana Prabhu, told me, he once asked Srila Prabhupada, why is the person Bhagavat considered more important than the book Bhagavat? And Srila Prabhupada said, because he can pull your ear. The book, you can take it or leave it. But if you're in the presence of the person, Bhagavat, he will be kind enough not to let you take it or leave it. He will force feed you. That is his tendency. Tathadu sangha utsrija satsu sajeta buddhiman santa evasya chinjanti manovya sangam uktibihi. The definition of a sadhu is given in this verse, that therefore, thereafter, tata, that means after understanding this material world is miserable, even if you go to the heavenly planets, knowing this, one should give up bad association. And being intelligent, one should seek out the association of saintly people, satsu sajeta buddhiman. These saintly people are those who by their words will cut all the attachments within our mind. So if you think, well, that's very painful to me. Oh, hurts me to hear all these things. You're a rascal. You're a fool. Which was, this kind of vocabulary was very much there with Srila Prabhupada. And we may become and say, oh, it's hurting me. But when we realize it's not me, it's when Srila Prabhupada says, this is nonsense, this is rascaldom, that cuts through the mind, through the ego. But that's not me. That has to be cut away, and then the soul is revealed. So Srila Prabhupada, when he says rascal, fool, he's not attacking anyone. If people could understand, it's not, it shouldn't be hurtful for them. But it's removing the covering on our pure consciousness. It's supposed to crack that open. But it may feel painful, just like Karna had armor. He was born with armor. So to rip that off must have been very painful. So it seems painful. When we identify the mind and the body as ourselves, it seems painful to cut that. But when that's cut, then drishta eva atmanishvare, then we can see, oh, I am the soul, I am not the body, I am not the mind. But it may seem painful. We have to be ready to accept that. Otherwise, we take that which is unreal to be real, and we suffer in this world. So truth, the quest for truth, voluntary, or it's not optional. Everyone must seek the truth, otherwise we remain on the platform of untruth, which means nasato vidyate bhavo. I opened this talk yesterday. Nasato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha. there is asat, untruth, and there is truth. As long as we remain on the platform of untruth, we remain on the platform of ignorance, of repeated birth and death, of taking asatere satta karimani, of taking that which is untrue to be true, and we suffer because of that. Ahankari matto hoya nittai pada pasharya asatere satta karimani. Due to egoism, we don't accept nityananda, which means the eternal bliss. We don't accept this to be true. We accept that which is untrue to be true, and thus we suffer. So this is the truth. We may say, well, it's different. People have different morals, and some people think it's okay to eat meat, and some people say it's not okay, but it's up to you. But no, it's a fact that by the laws of nature, if we act sinfully, we must be punished. We may believe it or not believe it, but it is a fact. As Srila Prabhupada often gave the example, you may believe or not believe. Someone may say, well, I don't believe if I steal that the government agencies will catch me and throw me in prison. You may or may not believe it, but it will happen. Because we are subordinate to the truth. That's our disease, thinking that we can ourselves define the truth. But the truth is superior to us. We are subject to laws, inexorable laws. Srila Prabhupada used that term. We can't escape from them. We may say, well, I think this and I think that. Well, you can think whatever you like, but you still have to suffer birth, death, old age, and disease. We're under higher control. We cannot escape that. So that is truth. People don't know. Here's a quote from Aldous Huxley, one of the great thinkers of the 20th century. As Srila Prabhupada said, that when he was asked about such people, Satsvarup, at that time, I don't think he was even a brahmachari, because they didn't even have ideas. It was so early, in the early days of the movement, there was no idea who's a brahmachari, who's a grihastha. They didn't even know those words. They were just Satsvarup Das. That's why. It was very, very early. Maybe he wasn't even initiated at the time. Very early days. He asked Srila Prabhupada about different philosophers and this and that, and what is their realization. And Srila Prabhupada said, as much as they're sincere, they have some realization. So they may say some things which are true, even very revealing within the world of relative truth. There are several who are very perceptive about the situation of the world of the relative truth. One of them in the 20th century that many people consider. I also, although I can confidently say that by the grace of Srila Prabhupada, my understanding of reality is much better than that of all the intellectuals in the world who are not touched by the grace of Srila Prabhupada. But yeah, many intellectuals, they consider George Orwell to be very perceptive. There are many, many such persons who are perceptive about the nature of this world. So in terms of relative truths, William Shakespeare, one of the reasons he's considered such a great author is because he had many insights into the nature of this world, from the relative platform. One of the reasons the Bible is considered still much revered is because there are many insights into the nature of reality, at least from the nature, seeing the nature of this world. So anyway, I'm quoting Aldous Huxley, and I'm giving a little reason why I should quote such an ultimately ignorant person. Because so he wrote our present. He wrote this. Must have been how long ago? How long ago would that be? 100 years ago, maybe. Still relevant today. Our present, more so today. Our present economic, social, and international arrangements are based in large measure upon organized lovelessness. Organized lovelessness. That is an analysis of human society without love, without Krishna consciousness. It's organized so that everyone can live together. But there's no love. Actually, if there's love, then if love and trust, then there's no need for so many laws. Godbrother of my Manidhar Prabhu told me, this was many years ago, he spoke with an elderly lawyer in Sweden. This must have been 30 years ago, and he was speaking with an elderly lawyer in Sweden. And he said that previously lawyers didn't have so much work here in Sweden because, and this would be, this is maybe true in some small towns in America even now, because two people would make a deal, say, okay, you buy this car, all right, then, okay, you pay me so much, and you can pay in installments every month so much, and they'd agree, and they'd shake hands, and that was it. And there was no need of a contract. That was normal for business deals and this and that. Because it's a small town, and everyone knew each other, and they weren't going to cheat each other. But nowadays, even between family members, you need a contract for everything. Otherwise, you'll be cheated. So modern society is organized lovelessness. We're organized in a manner that we can live together without loving each other, in a manner that we don't cut each other's throats that much. We may organize lovelessness. Very good analysis. So what's the result of this? Nashtatmano alpa buddhayaha. We destroy ourselves, we have no... we have very little intelligence. I mean, ultimately this society is running on a platform of very little... there's no real intelligence at all. Because real intelligence begins atato brahma jignasa. To inquire into the real... the nature of reality, the nature of the truth. Without that, however intelligent we may be, we missed the whole point. Just like so many people, they use their intelligence for playing computer games. They may be quite intelligent, but just they're absorbed in just a complete waste of time. Even from the material point of view. It's just as is said in India, time pass. That's all. Just passing time. For nothing, just their time, their tick, 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 their human life is going away. And then, the demons, what are they doing? Jagat ahita. They perform activities which are non-beneficial for the world because they're completely misguided. So we're heading towards destruction, individually, socially, nationally, internationally. We require to preach Krishna consciousness. That is truth. If we see Srila Prabhupada, I noted that Srila Prabhupada, he was the personification of distinguishing reality from illusion for the welfare of all. He would point out what is wrong with human society and give a Krishna conscious perspective. Many people nowadays, they can see, yeah, there are major problems in the world. There's pollution and diseases, AIDS, and refugee problem, malnutrition, danger of nuclear disaster, although Just a few days ago, one sannyasi, godbrother, told me that he thinks, based on something he saw on the internet, there's no such thing as nuclear bombs. It's all a hoax. And then I looked it up on the internet. There's a whole thing that there's no such thing as nuclear bombs, because it's not possible by the laws of physics to have a nuclear bomb. Nuclear energy is produced by slow nuclear fission. Anyway, either nuclear or whatever, you can ask the people in Aleppo they probably think, yeah, a nuclear bomb would be better, just finish us off all at once instead of bombing us bit by bit. In the 1980s in Europe, most people were sure that nuclear war is inevitable. It's just a matter of time. And some devotees, they made a good business of selling all kinds of things, books on how to survive the nuclear war that's going to come. Yeah, there are all kinds of people were building nuclear shelters. Even one of our big sannyasis spent hundreds and thousands of Deutschmarks on making some nuclear shelter. But then one prominent person said, when the nuclear bomb drops, I want to be right underneath it. Why? Because better to be dead than alive after it. It'll be such a hellish situation. So, yeah, there's the danger of a nuclear holocaust, war, terrorism, false economy, which can collapse at any time. And the whole cities are based on the presumption that everything will just go on as planned forever. But if the electric supply stops, the gas supply stops, especially electricity, if there's an oil problem and the food can't be transported in every day, if there's economic downturn, the people in the cities are going to be really in a big problem. If suddenly there's a crisis, which could be at any time, within 3 or 4 days, there won't be any food. And the whole cities will be starving. So good advice for young grihasthas: get out of the city. Go to the land, get away from the city, grow your own food and chant Hare Krishna. But even materially, it's good advice. Get out of the city. And even if the cities don't collapse, still it's good advice. You can live with fresh air, fresh water, fresh food, which are all unknown in the cities. Even if you're a billionaire, you can't get food as fresh as a poor man living in the country. It's not possible to get it as fresh. And not only is it not fresh, but it's all full of poison. The food, the air, the water. You live surrounded by people who you don't know, you don't want to know, and they don't want to know you. So go to the land and chant Hare Krishna. The cities are for preaching. Otherwise, there's no reason to be in these hellish cities. This country, it's the consuming the resources of the world. That the whole world could be fed and clothed, but few people enjoy it at the expense of others. So that's the truth. That's another truth. And there are so many unpleasant truths. Millions of abortions every year. True. And it's true. There's going to be reactions to that. What's another truth? Another truth is that we're all being cheated. Who likes to be cheated? Everyone's been cheated at some point in their life, right? There's no one who hasn't been cheated. How does it feel? It's one of the worst feelings, isn't it? If someone slaps you in the face, well, that's one thing. But if someone cheats you, it's such a feeling. You trusted them and they deliberately they violated your trust in them. But even the people we trust the most, they don't even know it, but they're also cheating us. Our parents are cheating us by giving us the idea that yes, we can be happy, just get a job, get money. The whole society is cheating us. It's the cheaters and the cheated, and it goes on generation after generation. We think, yeah, get money and get, then you can live happily. You have to do this. You won't be respectable unless you do it. So the teachers in the school, the TV, the internet, the newspapers, everything's simply, the whole society is just cheating us. They're misguiding us. They think that what the parents send the children to school, they think, yes, I have to give them a good education. So they don't stop to think that, well, my life is miserable. Why should I make my children's life miserable? Well, they're cheated to think, well, yeah, my life's quite good. You know, I have debts and anxiety, stress at every moment. I could lose, stressed out, I could lose my job at any time. But we think, oh, nice, I've got a good job. I'm earning plenty of money. So in this way, people are cheated and they cheat others. That's the truth. Difficult truth to find. We think that we're doing the best for our children, but we're actually doing them a great disservice. If you tell people this, they'll be upset. But it's actually a fact. Coming here to America, I see so many Indian people have emigrated here. And to a large extent, they've imbibed Western culture, which is detrimental to their spiritual advancement in so many ways. Gross ways like becoming gross meat eaters, drinking alcohol, illicit sex, but even our devotees, the way of thinking, was it last year or the, I was, when was Damodar Vangshai, when I was in Mountain, what's it called, Mountain Valley, Mountain View? Mountain View. So I came in to give a lecture, sat down, and they're all young South Indian people. Young means, you know, 30 years old, something like that. You remember this? I said to them, they're all mixed up, men and women. I said that you wouldn't do this in India. Why are you doing it here? Why have you lost your culture? And I could only suggest, I couldn't tell them, you should sit separately. And then I suggest that you sit, men and women separated. And they reluctantly got up and, because they're thinking, oh, we're in the West. We came here, we left India, we're in the West where everything's much better. So their culture must be better. So all men and women are all mixed up, sitting there. You know, someone sitting next to someone else's wife. And it's just not, it's America. This is the way that people do things in America. And soon you'll find that their daughters will grow up and they'll be going around in shorts and having abortions probably without the parents knowing. And, well, it's America. It's a better way of life. They're losing their culture. And they think now we're in a better situation. Truth. You like to hear it? You don't like to hear it. But is it true? Yes. Should it be said? Should it be said? Yes. Will you get upset? Probably. They do. I think they don't want me back there, do they? Huh? They don't want me back there. They do. You do. There are quite a few places they don't want me to go, actually, because I say things like this. And it's unpalatable, but the truth is not always what we like to hear. That's another nonsense idea of the modern world. Just be nice, say things that people like to hear. But in the meantime, if you don't say what people need to hear, then their nice life will come to an end and they'll end up as a worm in a dung heap, worm in stool. That's what happens. You don't like to hear it? Well, it's better that you hear it and take it seriously, because the truth is that this is what happens when we engage in activities, illicit sex, meat eating, gambling, intoxication. And the whole culture in the Western world promotes these things. So if we think that, okay, we'll mix up the men and the women and we'll all be friends and nice and I'm sitting next to someone else's wife and actually I think she's much better than my wife and we only live once, so why not, she can be my wife. I can dump the other one and steal this one. And these things are going on. That's one of Srila Prabhupada's sayings. These things are going on. And that's true, that this is the degraded culture of the modern world. So this book on speaking strongly in Srila Prabhupada's service, I wrote that because I was so fed up of people telling me, you shouldn't say things like this. People won't be happy. They'll become unhappy if you say things like that. You have to make people happy. That's true. But you have to teach them how to be happy. Their idea of how to be happy is a wrong idea. It's not based on truth. It's based on ignorance. So this idea, you just smile at people and give them blessings and pat their baby on the head and that's it. Then you're a sadhu. Then you're nice. But sadhu, santa evasya chindanti manovya sangha mukti bihi. Saintly person is one who cuts our mental attachments by his words. So we're supposed to do that. That's another truth. I can confidently say that on the basis of Srimad Bhagavatam, from which that verse is quoted. So there are so many. We're being cheated at every moment. The whole society is cheating us. How did Srila Prabhupada manage to preach, establish Krishna consciousness in the West? How was it possible? Srila Prabhupada came to the Western world. He spoke English, but most people couldn't understand his English. His accent was different. His grammar was different. He used archaic words and terms. Apart from that, his whole message was seemingly so unattractive. Rising early, no illicit. I mean, Srila Prabhupada is successful among the hippies, but to go among the hippies and say no illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, many of them would have been okay with that, and no gambling. Mostly they didn't have any money to gamble anyway. But they weren't particularly into gambling, but no illicit sex and no drugs. That's not what the hippies wanted to hear. And they didn't like that. They're not going to like this. How could Srila Prabhupada be successful? One reason we can say is that some people could perceive that here is a person who will not cheat us. He's not cheating us. He knows the truth. He lives the truth. He can connect us to the truth. Anything else but truth is cheating, and everyone has cheated us, even those who think that they're doing us good. They may think they're doing good, but they don't know. what is actually truth, and therefore they mislead us. We may say, well, they're good because they're trying to help us. An extreme example of this fallacy is Hitler and company of the Nazis, of Germany, of the 1930s and 1940s. You may say, they sincerely wanted to help the German people. They were sincere. They were convinced this is the way. They were fully dedicated to it. So they were sincere. They had their conviction. They stuck to it. They risked their life to establish the Nazi rule. They were committed. They did it. It seemed to work for some time. But it was based on multiple fallacies. The first fallacy is that, anyway, we're not Germans, and we're not the body. That's this basic fallacy of everyone. From that fallacy comes all the other fallacies, just like the Germans, they have the inherent right and duty to subdue all other people because they are a superior race. And by any means, they can do so. So you could say they were sincere. They wanted to do good for the German people, but they were grossly wrong. And so ultimately they didn't do good for the German people or for any other people. So similarly, people may be sincere. We want to help others by smiling at them, making them feel good, feeding them, giving them education. But unless they know how people can actually be helped, all their so-called sincerity, it's just another manifestation of envy of Krishna. And therefore, it can have no permanent result. And it can have no real, it can't really help people at all. If we're stuck in the cycle of birth and death, and we have a better education, so for a short life, in one short life, we can live more comfortably before we become a worm in stool in the next life, then what is the actual benefit? It's just like someone is in a prison being tortured, and then, for one day, we'll torture you, but instead of beating you 20 times a day with iron rods, we'll just beat you 10 times a day. So, no, the beating doesn't stop. The beating of Maya never stops. But we may think, oh, it's better. Or I'm being beaten with golden rods, and someone else is being beaten with rusty iron rods. So you see, we're superior people. We have a sense of prestige. I'm better than you. You see, we can look over at the people being beaten with iron rods and look at them and say, I'm superior to you. I'm suffering birth, death, old age and disease in America, and you're suffering birth, death, old age and disease in Mexico. So we are superior to you. This is illusion. The whole material world is sleeping on the lap of the witch called Maya. They don't know how to wake up. Devotees have to wake them up. Literally, in Bhaktivedanta Mana, that must have been 1975, just before 4 o'clock every morning, a kirtan party would come around the Brahmachari ashram, waking the devotees up. Singing jeev jago, gaura chanda bale, koto nidra jao maya pisha chirka. Very nice. Very nice. They woke every. What a nice way. There'd always be some brahmacharis who are grumbling about getting up, but who could complain? Well, there's a blissful kid. You wake up and you want to grow, and there's the devotees with blissful faith. That was Partha Prabhu. I don't think any of you know. He was in America for quite some time. I don't think any of you know him. He's very very nice memories to think of how he's blissfully come around every morning. He and a few other devotees had come chanting like that. They'd be up early, bathed, and they'd come around waking up like, wake up, wake up, kirtan. Kirtan, the holy name. And knowledge, kirtan. Srila Prabhupada also called the distribution of his books Sankirtan, because it's organized group glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead with the knowledge that people require. Here's another truth. I already said this one. Everyone's going to die soon. Whew. It's tough stuff for most people. For devotees, yeah. Okay. Yeah, we know. We're not in it. But for non-devotees, it's horrific. Especially people who think that life is just, it's, you're here now, you're dead, and that's finished. The whole idea, they want to live longer. But however long you live, Tarava King Najivanti. What is that? You can live. You can. These redwood trees. Where are they in California? Is it somewhere in California? They live for how long? Thousands of years. Thousands of years. But what is the use of such a life without knowledge? These very examples are given in Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a very powerful message. It makes people think, what is the use of living a long life without knowledge of who we are and what happens after death? What is the use? What is the use of having so much opulence and apparent happiness if we don't know where we're going in the next, we don't know what's happening? So we're fortunate to have this truth, to be able to think of the truth of death and not be disturbed by that. That's the first teaching of Bhagavad Gita. Dehino svinya ta dehe kumarang yovanang jarata ta dehantara praptya dhiras tatra namuhyati. The body changes from boyhood to youth to old age, and the next change is death, and one who is dhira, this word is, we often find in Shastra, the word dhira. Srila Prabhupada translates this, one who is sober. He means he's not bewildered in this matter. He's not bewildered. He doesn't become, oh, after someone died. Oh, my mother died. So he thinks she wasn't going to die? I remember this. I was in New York City when Mother Teresa died. And it was all over the newspapers and people writing, I was shocked to hear of her death. Why should you be shocked? She was 80 plus. What do you expect? She's not going to live forever. These, and they're quoting, you know, big people of the world. I was shocked. How foolish. How incredibly foolish that they think that they somehow think they're going to live. That's it. Maya makes our situation seem permanent. That's one reason it's good to be sannyasi who travels, because then you're supposed to be aniketa stiramati, without any home. When I'm coming to all these countries, and whenever I come to America, they always ask me so many questions at the immigration. I guess if I came in pants and shirts, then they wouldn't ask me, but I prefer to travel like this. Where do you live? Well, I don't have any home, I don't have any fixed place to live. Daksha's curse rolls on. But without any fixed home, but aniketa, but stiramatihi, when one's mind is fixed, not that one's body is fixed in one's place, and one's intelligence is fixed in the mode of ignorance, but one should be fixed in spiritual consciousness, and no, I don't belong anywhere in this world. People want to say, where do you live? And then they understand, then they can put you in some category. That, yeah, you okay, so you're Armenian, okay, you're like that. Or you're Egyptian, therefore you're like that. Or you're American, or you're like that. But we don't belong to this world. Where do you live? Where do we live? Which lifetime? Who are your parents? Which parents? So many parents I had. So many children I've fathered. So a devotee sees all of this, that everyone becomes attached to their situation. You see this sometimes the sparrows, they make their nest inside a building. I think you'll see this more in India than here, because the buildings are more open. Often the wall will be a lattice, which means with holes, because it never gets very cold throughout the year, so that allows for some air circulation. And the sparrows will come in and they'll try to make a nest, and people will cover that area so they can't come to make their nest, because if they make a nest it becomes all messy. And they'll come again and again and again and again and again. Even though they can't make their nest in that spot, they want to come to that spot. Another thing we commonly see with the ongoing urbanization of India is that at the edge of towns they build new buildings. That's what urbanization is, one of the main factors. And you'll see in the building under construction early in the morning, the peacocks calling out. They go in the building. Why did they go there? Because that was the field where they lived. Now it's not a field. Now there's a half-built house. But they still come to that spot. That's their spot. And they go there. But then after some time, they can't stay there. And the peacock population declines. So, you see, everyone's attached. They think that this situation is permanent. So, the truth is, one should consider smaran nityam anityatvam. One should always remember that everything in this world is temporary. Very good advice. Very good advice. Don't become attached to anything in this world. We can become attached to devotees because devotees are attached to Krishna. But if we become attached to anything of this world, then we're on the platform of ignorance. So the truth is that we won't be in this situation very long. The truth is that we are eternal parts and parcels of Krishna. So it's a very grave mistake to identify with anything other than our situation as eternal servants of Krishna. Conventionally, we may say, someone may say, I am an American, I am Indian. Conventionally, we may say. Conventionally means for the sake of living in this world, if someone says, where are you from? You can say, I am from India or whatever. But we know that when we say I, that only refers to the present body. I am not this body. I am an eternal servant of Krishna. And this body will be dead and gone. It won't stay very long. Now we all know this, but why are we talking about it? We have to hear it. Because by the power of maya, of illusion, even though we know theoretically that we're not the body, we don't belong in this world, we tend to think, I do belong in this world. I am this body. Therefore, we require to hear again and again and again, I am not the body. The power of illusion is so strong to make us think, I am this body, I am a product of this world. It's not true. We are not the body. Life is not the result of a combination of chemicals. We are spiritual living beings. The body is alive because of the presence of the soul. As soon as the soul goes, the body is dead, which means anyway it's dead. It's only the presence of the soul that gives it life. So remember, we're not going to be here long. That's true of devotees also. It's not that, well, I'm a devotee, so I don't have to think about it. We should think about it more. Having got this knowledge of Krishna consciousness, having got this life of Krishna consciousness, we should think about it more and understand. We don't have much time. We have to execute Krishna consciousness. We have to, before we leave this body, we should be prepared not to get born again. That should be our determination. We have the knowledge of how to prepare ourselves so that we don't get born again. So we should take that very, very seriously. It's not only that non-devotees are illusioned by the idea that we will live forever, but devotees may also be in that. Of course, we know we're not going to live forever, but there's the feeling, well, there's some time, there's time. Now I'm not Krishna conscious, but later I will be. But this morning we sung, Manusha Janama Shafala, what is that? Manusha Janama Shafala Karana Bhari. Make your human life successful. That means in Krishna consciousness. Don't delay. The truth is, we don't have much time. Time, tick, 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 tick. It's always going away. Therefore, Shravana Kirtana Karavanukhan. Always engage in hearing and chanting about Krishna. Ashata Pachalachari. Give up all nonsense talks and nonsense thoughts and nonsense engagements and fully take to Krishna consciousness. Everything will be gone in a short time. America is the most powerful in the country in the world. That's a relative truth. It's truth, but it's not going to be true forever. It wasn't true 300 years ago. There was no America. 200 years ago, America wasn't the most powerful country in the world. And quite likely in 200 years, or maybe in 2 years, it won't be the most powerful country in the world, and maybe there won't even be a country. Who can say what will happen? But it's not true. We just take it for granted. America dominates the world. Okay, but that's only for some time, because in this world there are waves and currents and everything is always changing. So we may take it for granted. America is very powerful, but it's all temporary. That is the nature of this world. People can't imagine. People can't imagine that America could be... They can't imagine a world not dominated by America. But it won't last forever, that's for sure. That we can say for sure. That a present American hegemony won't continue forever. It will come to an end. Because that's the nature of the world. Iraq used to be the center of a great, powerful civilization. Turkey, for hundreds of years, had a huge empire. What's Turkey now? What's Iraq now? Well, of course, it wasn't called Iraq at the time. Then so many Lithuania. Who's heard of Lithuania? Who's even heard of Lithuania? It had a powerful empire for some time. No, it's just a tiny little country that Russia can take them over in 20 minutes anytime they want. So this is the nature of this world. It's who is powerful today is reduced to insignificance tomorrow. As I often say when speaking in Hindi, Aaj ka raja kal ka kutta. Who is a king today is a dog tomorrow. And that's actually Srila Prabhupada was informed by one of his godbrothers that an astrologer had calculated that an ex-prime minister of India was living in Sweden. One man had two dogs, and the ex-prime minister of India wasn't the man with two dogs, he was one of the dogs. And he must have moved on by now, because dogs don't live that long. Where is he now? So this is the nature of Maya. Harsh truths, bitter truths, we should hear. It's very happy truth that Krishna is dancing with Radha. We can join that dancing by chanting Hare Krishna. Go and join that dancing. But as long as we want to remain, as long as we are thinking we can be happy in this material world, we'll have to dance to the tune of Maya. That is the truth. That is an unpleasant truth. Birth after birth after birth, we'll have to dance to the tune of Maya. We don't stay in one body very long. We go from body to body to body. And by the influence of Maya, we get a nature just like that. I remember once I saw one center in India I was living at. We had in Baroda. We have in both in the front and the back. We have a garden like that. So in one dog, one morning as I was chanting japa, the dog had just given birth to a litter of puppies. So I went to look at them, and immediately one puppy, born no more than half an hour, started barking at me. It's got dog consciousness. Just comes with the body. Shrotram chakshu sparshanam cha rasanam granam evasha adhishtaya manaschaiva. What's the last line? Vishayanupasevate. We get different kinds of powers to see, touch, taste, smell, feel and hear, grouped around the mind, in body after body. So if we get a dog body, we have the mind of a dog, and we bark like a dog, and we think like a dog, and I am a dog. The dog doesn't have any philosophical speculation that I am a dog, but he's completely in dog consciousness. Touches, tastes. So this is what happens. And as long as we don't know the truth of Krishna consciousness, then our way of thinking is just another animalistic way of thinking. I am a human. I meant for a living like this, more sophisticated you could say, but basically in ignorance of our real situation. So these are truths which we have to learn from Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Bitter truths, harsh truths of this material world, and give people the truth of the beauty of Krishna and the spiritual world. Now it's time for aarti, and Krishna willing, we can continue this discussion tomorrow. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.